Welcome, and thank you for listening to Grace Heritage Church Audio, Building a Household of Faith on a Foundation of Grace. Visit us online at graceheritage.org. Please stay tuned after the message for more information.
Proverbs 25:25, as cold water to a thirsty soul, so is good news from a far country. We just wanted to share with you during this hour a little bit about where we have come from and where God has placed us. I know I shared some during my sermon about my life and how God saved me and called me into ministry. Well, this is our family today. This was taken just a few months ago. Stephen to the left there, tall, dark, and handsome. Takes after his mother. He's 20 and he's in the Brazilian Air Force. He's in his completing his second year there. And we're praying about his future. Deborah is 22. She's in her third year of college. She studies at the McKinsey University, Presbyterian University that's in São Paulo, that was founded by Presbyterian missionaries years ago. It's one of the best colleges in Brazil, and she's studying law, and she's not sure where she's going to be going with that. And she's even talking about being a judge. We named her Deborah after the Deborah of the Bible, who was a judge, so who knows? The Lord might fulfill that in her life. I don't know. Brazil's a very corrupt and dangerous country, and so I don't really want her dealing with too many of the high-up criminals that are there. But pray for her as you pray for us, and then, of course, my wife and I. We didn't start in Brazil. My wife started in Brazil because she was born there, but our mission work actually started in Albania. I had completed seminary in the end of 1992, I was praying about going to South America. I just finished my studies, and I'd been to Brazil twice on two short-term mission trips. And so I was praying about returning there and working maybe with IMB in Brazil. But when I was in the process of completing papers, filling them out, and there's a lot of papers when you go with IMB, the Lord opened up the opportunity for me to go to another country. My pastor, Phil Newton, who's probably many of you know from Memphis, he called me and said, I've heard about a country in Eastern Europe that's opened up, and they need missionaries who have a heart for pioneer evangelism, for work with orphanages, and there's some guys that are going over there just in 3 weeks, and I thought you might be interested in taking a survey trip there. Of course, I just graduated from seminary, and they're going in 3 weeks, and I was like, you know, it costs money to fly, and so I just began to share about the possibility with some other people and a couple of churches, and 3 weeks later I was on an airplane to Albania. And I spent one week in Albania, and after my week there I came back to the U.S. and I began to prepare to go there as a single missionary and plant my life there, if that was God's will. And that's what we always need to be open to God in things that He gives us opportunity to be a part of or participate in. Just, Lord, what is Your will? When I was in seminary, my prayer was, Lord, here am I, send me. And I almost always closed my prayer time with that prayer. And just saying, Lord, here I am, I'm available. If you want me to go somewhere, do something. If you want me to stay here in Memphis, Tennessee, and continue working in the prison system with teenagers, I'm open to doing that. But just, Lord, here am I, send me. That should be our prayer at all times. And so that was my prayer. And so I went to Albania, came back, and then I began to prepare to go back to Albania. During that time, as I was making my preparations to go to Albania, well, a young lady who I'd met on one of my mission trips to Brazil in 1990, and whom I had been writing letters to for 3 years, no emails, no Facebook, no FaceTime, not even a telephone call. 3 years we wrote letters by hand, and we got to know each other by our letters. And so she visited the United States shortly before I was to go to Albania, and I knew she was coming. And so she ended up in Memphis. We talked. She met my family. She met my church family, and everybody loved her. And so a few days before she was back, about to return to Brazil, I was with her, and I said, you probably said, Kevin, what did you ask? Did you ask her, will you marry me? No, I didn't. I said, are you willing to go to Albania? Why? Well, because God had called me and was sending me to Albania. And if she wasn't willing to go to Albania, then it wasn't God's plan for us to pursue anything further than that. So I said, are you willing to go to Albania? And she looked at me and said, yes. And so that was our engagement, basically. And we were engaged. A few days later, she went to Brazil. I prepared, and in July of 1993, I arrived in Albania. And I was in Albania for 6 months, helped learning the language, preparing a place for my new bride-to-be. And she was in Brazil preparing for our wedding. 2 weeks before our wedding date, on January 15th of 1994, 2 weeks before the wedding, I flew to Rio de Janeiro, arrived there. Didn't know hardly any Portuguese. And so we were married 2 weeks later. Then 2 weeks after our wedding, I took her with me to Albania. And she's never forgiven me for that. Because I didn't calculate very well. Brazil in January is the middle of the summer. In Rio de Janeiro in the summer is one of the hottest places in Brazil. I like talking about 9,500 degree weather pretty much every day. And so, of course, in Albania, it's the middle of the winter. 0 degrees or zero Celsius, but 32 degrees below freezing. And so I took her with me 2 weeks after our wedding. We spent our honeymoon 2 weeks learning Albanian. Well, that was fun, but... But we arrived in Albania after our wedding. There's another video of me. I went to a mountain village before we were married and visited there. We did some giving out of tracts and Bibles in one of the mountain villages, and that was in 93. A group of the children there from the village we went to. We were left there by a helicopter. Actually, there was not a road that went to this village, so there was a helicopter called Heli Missions. They took and dropped us off, and we left us there in the village, and then they came back and picked us up later. So that was my first trip there. And then we were married in January of 94. And we look the same, don't we? Well, a little bit. She does, but... So a few months after we arrived back in Albania, after our wedding, I took her back with me to the same village. There, and you see the mountains there in Albania. Went up to the same village, but we didn't go by helicopter. We rode in the back of an open flatbed truck with the Albanian villagers with all of their stuff, sometimes chickens and other things. They take you back into the winding mountains along a curvy road that has some drop-offs that you don't want to go there. And they drop you off at the bottom of the mountain. Then we hiked up the mountain, and we spent a few days there in the mountain village there with the Albanian family that I had met and began to share Christ with. Some Albanian children, first time reading the gospel in their language. These were some tracts that were made for children, first time they're reading about Christ. Tirana Orphanage, one of the main orphanages in the capital city of Albania, in Tirana. They had over 100 kids. My wife and I ran a sponsorship program for over about 150 children in three different orphanages. My wife taught some English classes to some ladies. A couple of these are sisters who ended up being a part of our ministry team. And when we had Bible studies for children in our home, we'll show that in just a moment. Baptism in the Big Lake of Tirana, the capital city. Had the opportunity to participate in a baptism service of another church that was being planted there. A Christian club that was started by Arion there on the right. I met him when he was 14 years old when we first arrived in Albania. His father had passed away a couple of years before. He lived with his mother and younger brother. And Arion came to faith in Christ through a group who was doing evangelism door-to-door. They passed the cards on to me and some others, and I found Arion, met him, invited him to church. He began to come to church. I began to do discipleship with him. I would take him with me to the mountain villages to be my translator often because I didn't speak Albanian well, especially in the first couple years. And Arion started this Christian club when he was about 16. These are just the leaders of the Christian club. Every Saturday afternoon, they have classes on Saturday morning there. Afternoon, they'd get a group of 20 to 25 students together where they'd sing songs, have a Bible study together. And Arion was reaching his fellow students and even some teachers that he was witnessing to. Let me go back to Arion real quick. He's about 37 today. He's not following the Lord. For a few years, several years, he's not been following after the Lord. He came and got a double major here in the States at Grand Valley State in Michigan. Went back, started an organization to fight crime in Albania, which was a huge problem. That did very well. He became popular there amongst the people. Again, he got more involved in politics, got more education, and began to rise in the ranks of politicians there. And he today is the mayor of the capital city of Albania, of Tirana, 1.5 million people. He was the Ministry of Labor under the, well, who's the prime minister now. And I assume when the other prime minister finishes his position, his time as prime minister, Arian will probably be elected as the prime minister of Albania. I mentioned that to ask you to pray for him because the Lord could use him in a great way. He told me when he was 16 years old with tears in his eyes, he said, "Kevin, I want to change my country." Sitting on a bench there in the capital city, "I want to change my country." He saw the corruption, the darkness, 50 years of communism. He said, "I want to change my country. I'm tired of what I'm seeing here." And he left and he came back and he did what he said he was going to do. But in the process, he walked away from his faith. To what extent, I don't know because it's hard for me to contact him anymore. I send emails to him every once in a while, but he rarely responds to anything. But God has him in a position, and maybe in a higher position, to really expand the work of evangelicalism in the country of Albania, which is a predominant Muslim country. So just if you remember Albania, think about it. Pray for Arian and what God can do there through him. Youth and singles Bible study we had in our home. Children's Bible study we had almost every Saturday, 20 to 25 children in our living room. We taught them Bible songs in their language and did Bible studies from beginning from Genesis on through and just planted a lot of seeds in those days. And of course, the worker here, as I mentioned, is one of the ladies from Deborah's, Eugenia's English class. Here's Eugenia. Here's our little daughter, Deborah, here in the little blue t-shirt or blue sweatshirt. So when she was a year young. And then Brazil. As Paul mentioned, I have to tell about the when we were evacuated from the Marines. We were in Albania in 1997. And a lot of the Brazilian, I'm a Brazilian people, a lot of the Albanian people had invested their life savings in pyramid investment schemes that the country had allowed, the government had allowed to function. And the investment schemes started to collapse. People began to panic. They began to blame the government. The government said, "You know, we're innocent." And so the people rose up and from different parts of the country. First it was in the south, then to the north, and all of them were coming toward the capital city of Tirana, demanding the government do something to get their money back. Of course, the government, you know, was probably involved in it, but they began to raid the military warehouses in Albania, and getting arms were put in the hands of anybody and everybody. The prisons were... the prisoners were let out, and so the country became armed. Well, it happened. We saw it happening, and we tried to get a plane ticket out of Albania, but it didn't work. The airport had closed. Other avenues to get out of the country, ferry boats going to Italy, were very dangerous. And so we were caught overnight there. We were not able to get out. We didn't know what to do at first. And both of our children, of course, as you saw, were small. Deborah was 2, and Stephen was like 6 months. And so overnight, we stayed in another missionary's house. And we stayed close to the floor because there was the sound of military or machine gun fire and other weapons fire all around us, bombs, hand grenades blowing up things. And so we stayed close to the floor and up in the apartment building where we were overnight, waiting for a call from the U.S. Embassy to tell us what to do. And so the next morning, we did receive a call. The embassy said, "Come as quickly as you can to the embassy compound, and we're going to fly as many as we can out of the country." So we got on. We waited in line there with a lot of other foreigners and missionaries, and we got on these huge transport helicopters. They flew us from Tirana to a ship that was waiting out in the Adriatic Sea. And, of course, these guys with 50-caliber machine guns on each side of the helicopters, we fly out looking for anybody that wanted to shoot at the helicopter. And we heard later that the helicopter behind us was shot at when they had to stop the evacuation. But we were able to get out, and we stayed on the ship for a few hours, and then they flew us from the ship to southern Italy, and we stayed there for a couple of days, went on a train to Rome, stayed in somebody's basement for 3 days with our 2 small children, then we got a plane flight to France, and we ended up staying in France for several months. I went back to Albania to see if things were calm and if we could return, and things were still very unstable. So I went back to France, and we ended up coming to the U.S. for about 5 or 6 months, and then we went back to Albania, and we stayed for 1 more year in Albania to the end of 1998. And things were still kind of unstable there, but we stayed as long as we could. And which we sensed it was time for us to leave. So we went to Brazil. We went to Brazil at the and did a survey trip, and we were seeking God's direction of where he wanted us to serve him. And even when I went to Albania in the first place, I felt God was leading me toward South America. But he had a 5-year detour for me before he allowed me to fulfill the desire of my heart. And so I just was obedient. And sometimes God's plans are different than our plans. And sometimes he will put off our desire of our hearts for something that he has for us at that moment to teach us or use us to reach somebody else. And sometimes we need to be patient with what God is doing and not rush and push, force our plans on what God is not in. And so 5 years we spent in Albania and reached a lot of people, and God used it there in a great way. And I still have Albania in my heart. And I even tried to go back there a couple of times after we were in Brazil. I just wanted to go back. But the Lord took us on a 5-year detour, and then we ended up in Brazil, and we spent a few months there on a survey trip. We came back to the U.S., and then we arrived in Brazil in Niterói in May of 2000. And Niterói is a city of about probably close to 1 million people now. It was about 500,000, 800,000 when we first arrived there. And it's probably close to 1 million people, but it's across the bay from Rio de Janeiro. If you saw the photo here, you see there's a big bay there. This is on the other side of the bay. You'll see those lights on the mountain on the other side. That's area close to where Niterói is. And so we arrived there in May to work with a Brazilian church, a Brazilian Baptist church with a Brazilian pastor. And we worked with them for a while. This is our family about the time we arrived there in the country. And we worked with the church for a while, but we saw it wasn't going to work out. So the Lord led us in another direction. We didn't know what to do. We did not plan on starting a church in Brazil. But we started with about 5 people in our home, just my wife and me and our children, and my wife's sister and her family. And then other people began to come, and they wanted to be a part of what we were doing. So we started a little mission church. And this is the group that we had there, the first couple years of the church, the ladies' choir. Then we moved to another location. That's called Faithful Baptist Church, where the church is today. We moved there in 2004. And, of course, you see there the church was in a storefront. You open the 2 large metal doors, and that stays open the whole time. You don't close the door. So whatever goes by outside, you get that inside your church. And whatever you're preaching and teaching or whatever you're doing inside, that goes outside as well to people that are passing by. And so that's where the church met. And then there was a couple of ladies that we were able to see fruit in their lives who came to faith in Christ, Christiane, who came to the Lord. And then Dona Nilta, we call her Dona Nilta, Miss Nilta, 78 years old. She's one of those who was caught by just walking by the door when the doors were open, just looking in, seeing what was going on. Catholic all of her life. Goes to the Catholic services, goes there and does the Catholic things, you know, with the beads and repeating the priest's prayers. And she just, out of curiosity, told us later, she says, I just began to walk by and I would look in to see. And I said, well, those people, they seem to like each other. They talk to each other. They have fellowship together. When we go to the Catholic church, we don't talk to anyone. We go and we sit down, we do our little thing, and then we get up and we go home. And we don't see any real love between one another. And I saw there was something different about the church there. And eventually her curiosity got the best of her, and she came inside, began to sit, but participate in our services, and she embraced Christ as her Lord and Savior. Here's Christiane and her public profession of faith there before the church. Dona Nilta, Miss Nilta, she cried before, during, and after her baptism. She just couldn't stop. And she was just overwhelmed with joy and just the peace of God in her life. Finally, after all those years, not really finding the truth in Christ, and she embraced that. And we had the opportunity to baptize her. And she's 80, probably close to 85 or so now. And still, she's not able to come to church anymore, but she still stays in contact with us, and we stay in contact with her to make sure she's doing okay. There's the church in one of our anniversary services there on the inside. And there's our family as we're growing there and getting taller. And this was around 2006, I think. And then Elcio, Pastor Paul knows Elcio. He's been a faithful member of our church. And when we were called, invited to go to another city, he stayed and continued to watch over the church. There was a couple of guys who were supposed to come as pastors. They didn't work out. They backed out or for whatever reason. And he stayed there continually teaching and preaching because we were about 4.5 to 5 hours away. So I couldn't come every weekend to continue leading the church. But I came once a month to do the Lord's Supper and encourage the folks. And then, but Elsie, the rest of the time, Elsie was like pastoring the church. And so he said, well, I need to get better prepared. I need to get some seminary classes and stuff. So he started doing some seminary classes. And about a year ago, he completed his seminary classes, and we ordained him to the pastoral ministry. And during this time, he has embraced the Reformed theology, has grown very much in that area, and is very solid in his preaching and teaching. And he soon will be installed as the head pastor of the church. Another thing that started there, Nita Roy, and I'm going to try to rush through these a little bit because our time is going to get away from us. From 2005-2013, we had a theological conference in Nita Roy. I know Pastor Paul has probably told you some stories about our times there because he was there for 6 straight years preaching at this, as I got proof of that. There he is. And it was started by our church, Baptist Church, and then Pastor DeValdo and Pastor Hubens. DeValdo is the Assembly of God pastor. Pastor Hubens, a Presbyterian pastor, and together we organized and put on this conference to reach pastors and leaders in the area of Nita Roy. And people say, well, you know, it's hard enough to get 3 Baptist pastors together to organize and do something without, you know, in peace. Imagine 3 pastors from 3 different denominations doing it together. But they embraced the doctrines of grace, solid men of God. And for 9 years, God blessed the ministry there. And there's one of the early meetings there. The meetings were held in the Assembly of God Church, which drew a lot of Pentecostals and Charismatics just to come and see what was going on there. You know, they've got these gringos from the United States are here, and it's in the Assembly of God Church, and a lot of them came just out of curiosity. But we saw God reach a lot of people with solid biblical doctrines during those years. And Pastor Paul was a big part of that, as you can see there. Preaching there with Thiago Santos as his translator. And there's the ladies' choir. It was the Assembly of God Church ladies' choir that sang almost every year. And this was around 2010, the participation there at the conference. And these are men and women from different churches and denominations throughout the city there. And then we were invited to work with Fiel Ministries. The word Fiel in Portuguese, it means faithful. And Faithful Ministries, or Fiel Ministries, in San José dos Campos. San José dos Campos is about 45 minutes from São Paulo. And we were invited by this couple here, Richard and Pearl Denham. They spent 60 years of their lives in Brazil as missionaries, started translating Reform material probably in the 60s. And up in the Amazon region, moved down to São Paulo, began Fiel Ministry as a publishing ministry, publishing books. And they started a conference ministry 33 years ago. First conference they had was 85 people. Today we were having about 2,000. It comes our annual conference from pastors and leaders throughout Brazil and even outside of Brazil. Both of them have gone to be with the Lord. But Pastor Richard, he had heard what we were doing in Nita Roy with this little Reformed theological conference. And he said, well, we're interested in what you're doing there. We want to invite you to come and work with us. And this was in 2006. And so after a year of praying and seeking the Lord, we accepted their invitation. In October in 2007, we publicly, during the conference there in Brazil, accepted the Pastor Richard's invitation to be the coordinators for the Adopt-a-Pastor Project, or the Adopt-a-Pastor Ministry. And so my wife and I are today the coordinators. We've been there for about 10 years. When we started, there was probably a little over 100 pastors and leaders who were involved in 4 different countries. Today, there are 450 pastors and leaders in 7 different countries who are part of the Adopt-a-Pastor Ministry. When they are sponsored, they get a book a month. They get help to attend our annual conference, if we have a conference in their country. And they also have access to 3 free theological training through 9 Marks Ministries that we have done a lot of videos with them. And so my wife and I continue as the coordinators for this ministry. During the conference in Brazil, we have a special time just for the pastors who are in the Adopt-a-Pastor Ministry. They come, we get a chance to meet them, give them their 1 or 2 books for the month or next month, And then we let them share with us what's going on in their lives and ministries. How's this been a blessing to you? We hear some wonderful testimonies of how God is blessing these pastors. And they're from different denominations. We don't choose just one or two denominations. We're open to any pastor and leader of an evangelical church who wants to receive solid theological literature to build a small pastoral library and get help through the conference ministries. I meet with some of the pastors there. And our ministry team has started with me and my wife about 10 years ago. And these are others that are working with us now. Marley does finances. She's standing next to my wife. Sandro and Clarissa are our coordinators in Mozambique. We have about 100 pastors in Mozambique, and they're coordinators for Mozambique and also all of Africa. And then Edvanio here to the left, he's a Brazilian missionary. He's been in Portugal for almost 5 years, and God is using him in a great way in a difficult place to reach pastors and leaders in that country. And I'm going to show you a little bit about that through our FIEL conferences for pastors and leaders. Here's our Portugal conference. I went there in 2008. Usually we average about 50 to 60 people in our conferences there. Since Edvanio has been there for the last 5 years, it has grown significantly. So this was in this last year. We usually have the conference in April of each year. And they're meeting in a Catholic seminary. Yes. That's the sanctuary for the Catholic seminary. I don't know if they put drapes over the statues and stuff there or sheets to hide that. I don't know. I don't know what they have there. But they meet there in the Catholic seminary, use their facilities, and they also use the dormitories for pastors who travel from outside. But God is greatly blessing the work of Edvanio there in Mozambique. As I mentioned there, Sandra and Clarissa are there. We have two conferences there. One is in the north of the country, the green and white tent. It's in Nampula to the north. We have about 300 to 350 each year that come to our conference there. And this Carl Peterson, who was the adoptive pastor coordinator for many years in Mozambique. It's tough when you deal with a lot of countries at the same time. And he continues to help organize the conference there in the north. And then we started a second conference in 2012 in Maputo, which is the capital city of 1.5 million people. Most of the Bible schools and seminaries are in the south of the country of Mozambique, in the capital city. And a lot of these pastors were trying to go to the conference we had in the north, and it's a 2 to 3 day bus trip just to get there. And we were trying to help them with some of their expenses, and it was getting to be just almost impossible. So I said, why not bring the conference to them? And so we started a conference in 2012, and here Joel Beakey is sitting on the front. He was one of our first speakers at our first conference there. We had about 250, and since then we've increased. In 2015, we have about 350 plus that attend our conference there in the capital city of Maputo. There's me. I just wanted to show off my African shirt, you know. That's one of the guys that adopted a pastor there. When you go to a country, you kind of dress like they dress, and they really appreciate it. And they go, look at the gringo. He's wearing one of our shirts. So it's pretty neat, you know. It's kind of fun. Guinea-Bissau, it's in West Africa. We had our first conference in November of this past year. We had a place for 150. It was packed, and there was people waiting outside to get in. So we're going to try to increase our space there. Edvanio, the guy who's our missionary in Portugal, is organizing and putting on this conference for us. It's a direct flight from Portugal to Guinea-Bissau. And so he's there organizing this. We're organizing a bookstore there as well for FIEL books to be sold and to be put in the hands of the pastors and leaders there. And then this is our Brazil conference. As I mentioned, been going on for 33 years. We have close to 2,000 people that attend each year. We had our largest was about 3 years ago. We had John Piper came down as one of our main speakers. Of course, that drew more people to want to hear John Piper. But usually we average around 1,800 to 2,000 in our annual conferences in Brazil. This was our celebration of 30 years of conferences a couple years ago. Dr. Pastor video. Real quick, let's see if we can get this to work. I might. I'm afraid if I hit the wrong button here, we're going to lose everything and start over again. Y'all don't want to start over again. I don't think. I'm just kidding.
Hopefully I won't mess it up.
This is a video. Give some testimonies. It has English subtitles in the testimonies of the pastors and some other things that are in English as well. So just listen to how God is blessing the adoptive pastor ministry and the lives of these pastors.
Quando eu recebi o e-mail, eu estava em casa vendo meu e-mail, aí eu vi lá o e-mail do projeto Adote um Pastor. Aí eu chamei minha esposa na hora, vem cá para você ver, eu fui, né? Fui escolhido para participar do projeto.
Não porque eles têm demais, mas porque Deus tocou o coração deles para poder ajudar.
Então quando eu fiquei sabendo, eu fiquei maravilhado. É uma criança ganhando um brinquedo.
E quando eu recebi a notícia afirmativa, positiva, que ia ser parte deste projeto, realmente eu fiquei emocionado.
Porque foi na hora exata em que eu assumi o meu ministério na primeira igreja como pastor, foi a hora que eu fui aceito pelo projeto.
Begun by Editora Fiel, the Adopt a Pastor Ministry has the goal of equipping the church by providing pastors and leaders with sound literature and biblical teaching. The ministry reaches Portuguese-speaking countries such as Brazil, Mozambique, Portugal, Angola, Cape Verde, Guinea-Bissau, São Tomé and Príncipe, and East Timor. Our goal is that each participant receives one book per month for a period of 3 years, resulting in a personal library of 36 books as well as sponsored participation in Fiel's National Conference. By adopting a pastor, you will be investing in his ministry and influencing his family, church and community.
Minha família, a minha igreja tem tido a oportunidade de sentir isso na prática, né? Eu recebo os livros, eu estudo esses livros, eu leio esses livros, mas eu transformo isso, né, em ensinamento para os meus irmãos.
Minha esposa também tem lido os livros. Isso significa o quê? A minha família está sendo alcançada pelo projeto.
E esses livros têm sido úteis não só para nós, mas também aos nossos irmãos. Lá diretamente no terreno eles aproveitam, porque esses livros não são fáceis de chegar assim de qualquer maneira para qualquer crente.
Porque acreditamos que um pastor que recebe uma boa instrução, que lê bons livros, ele é capaz de crescer na fé e fazer com que o seu rebanho também cresça.
Além de nós podermos ter contato com a literatura, boa literatura do projeto, nós temos tido também o privilégio de frequentar, de participar de algumas conferências.
Essas conferências se tornam de grande valor, porque dão o material que o pastor precisa para poder servir à igreja. E a igreja em Moçambique, aos poucos, vai crescendo, porque os pastores estão a ser capacitados dessa maneira.
Temos ajudado em termos de comunhão uns com os outros, comunhão de homens e mulheres que abraçaram as doutrinas da fé.
Quero agradecer a esses irmãos que têm participado desse projeto, que mesmo sem nos conhecer, têm colaborado com a nossa vida e com o nosso ministério também.
Eu agradeço por excelência este irmão, esse pastor, essa igreja que se lembrou de mim. Eu sei que foi tocado por Deus e ele tem usado seus recursos para poder me abençoar aqui.
Então, a primeira coisa é Deus, obrigado. Obrigado, Senhor, porque você tem tido misericórdia da gente, né?
Muito agradável, estou agradecido a Deus. É gratidão profunda pela provisão de Deus e pelo ministério da Fiel.
Que os mantenedores continuem firmes nesse propósito, porque com certeza milhares de pessoas estão sendo abençoadas.
Become a sponsor through the Adopt a Pastor Ministry. With $35 a month, you will be equipping a pastor and investing directly in his spiritual growth. Write us. pastors@editorafiel.com.br.
So as you invest in our lives as missionaries, you're investing in these lives as well, because as I say, my wife and I were the coordinators for this ministry. There's 450 pastors and leaders in 7 countries who are being are benefited by this ministry right now. Let me go real quickly. Invest in God's kingdom by adopting a pastor. If you need more information, we have some brochures there on the back, in the back there. Partners. This is very interesting here, my closing minutes. Fiel's partnership with Ligonier Ministries, The Race of Faith by R.C. Sproul. We translate a lot of R.C. Sproul's booklets. We did a partnership with them a few years ago for the World Cup. We translated about 150,000 of his booklets, evangelical booklets. And they were distributed during the World Cup in different stadiums. In this last year, during the Olympics in Rio, 750,000 copies were translated of his book, in 5 different languages, English, Portuguese, Spanish, French, and Chinese. And these booklets were distributed during the Olympic events by different groups, church groups in Brazil, groups that came down, but they were distributed there during the Olympics in Rio. And recognize that guy there? You see there in his hand? One of the groups that were distributing the booklets got one of R.C. Sproul's booklets, the Way of Faith, the Race of Faith, and was able to put it into his hands. He took it. Hope he read it. We hope to see some fruit from that in the days to come. But this is one of the partnerships that FIA has. We have partnerships with other large ministries, Ligonier, Desiring God, Nine Marks, Gospel Coalition. They are part of the FIA ministries. We translate their materials, and they help us as well. Local church ministries, we're involved in this is our Sunday ministry or during the week, Grace Baptist Mission in San Jose de Campos, where we're living now. And you see there that we're kind of in need of a little bit of space there. The church is 2 rows of chairs on each side. This is a renovated house, and that's where we meet. Marcos is the head pastor, Brazilian pastor, and I serve under him as the assistant pastor. This is our evening services there. Some of my buddies, after the service, it's in a very difficult neighborhood. A lot of drug trafficking goes on there. These 2 boys, the one on my back and the one in the white shirt, are brothers, but they have different fathers. They have same mother, but different fathers. One of their fathers is in prison. The other one, I think, may be in prison or not really involved in his life. And some of the other 2 boys as well, they have, I'm not sure they have the same mother or father. But we try to invest in their lives. These are some of the kids that we spend time with on a weekly basis. This is outside of our FIEL ministry. This is our church, local church ministry that we're involved in on a regular basis. Saturday youth and children's meetings. Saturday morning English classes that I teach for kids there for free if they want to come on Saturday mornings to learn English. And also it's a chance for me to build a relationship with them. We teach English to them. Evangelism in a local park. Sometimes every other month we go out to the park. We do play football, sports, and we sit down with some of the guys in the area. A lot of guys are just sitting around in groups smoking marijuana or doing other drugs. And we give gospel tracts to those people in the park, and then we share the gospel with those that will sit down with us there. Midweek Bible study and prayer every Thursday night there in the church. And then the last ministry we're involved in is Haven of Hope. One thing to say about this church, we're in need of a new facility, as you can see. The church, we cannot build on top of it. We're going to eventually have to level the whole place, build a sanctuary in the bottom, build a second floor for class space. There's a lot of things we want to do ministry-wise there, but it's very limited. So pray about this. We're hoping to raise some funds to help with the materials to buy that and maybe have the Brazilians, guys that are there, they're involved in construction, just to build that. But that's a need that we need to pray about because this church, we cannot grow and we cannot do more ministry, be involved in more ministry because we just don't have the space there. Haven of Hope Brazil, that's another video. We're going to skip that one. But it's a ministry that we're involved in as well, 1 or 2 days a week, where some kids from a public school come to a ministry that's started by the mother church of the mission church. I don't want to confuse everybody. But they come, there's about 20 to 25 kids, 9-year-olds, 10-year-olds, and we help them enforce their studies in school, but we also tell them about Jesus Christ. And I'm in charge of the pastoral ministry with these young people, and we have devotionals every morning before we start the class time. And we also have times when we sit down and talk to these kids as well, sharing the gospel with them. That's another ministry, and we don't have time to do that now. Questions and answers. We got 5 minutes till 12. Anyone? You've seen a lot of things, heard a lot of things. Now's your chance.
Distort the message of the gospel, not necessarily on like secondary issues that we can agree to disagree, but like on primary issues like maybe like prosperity theology, liberation theology. How does your church engage Catholicism and then on the other hand, other Protestant distortions?
I think it's basically building relationships, because a lot of the Catholics, they think they're okay. They believe in Jesus. You know, they have a Bible, and you know, they go to church. So I mean, you're already, they think they're a Christian. I mean, as far as a genuine Christian. And it's just basically having a chance to build a relationship with them and have a chance to sit down with them and go through the scriptures and see, show them what biblical conversion really is. Sin, Christ, grace, and explain to them. A lot of times when you have the opportunity to explain to them, they say, "Wow, I've never seen it that way before. They never told us that." We kind of have to work our way to salvation, and I see that it's a little bit different. And so building relationships is a key thing there. Because a lot of everyone have Jesus stickers on their cars and, you know, and other things like that. So building relationships is fundamental a lot of times in having opportunity to share a biblical gospel with those folks. Was that all? That's the gist of it there. Yes, sir.
How many men do you have that are waiting to be adopted by?
That fluctuates quite a bit. It used to be, we used to have probably 500 to 1,000 normally on our waiting list, mostly in Brazil, because Brazil is a larger country. A lot of times the pastors on a waiting list in Africa get adopted quickly because there's people who, you know, Brazilians who want to adopt people outside of their country. But we probably at the moment would have maybe 200 or so on our waiting list, but we get contacted almost every day through emails or online requests of people wanting to know, have more information or be a part of the Adopt a Pastor ministry. Some of them we find out, and we ask them, how many books of Fiel? Because we give them books that we publish. We ask them, how many books of Fiel do you have? And we give them a list of, say, 80 books. And a lot of times it comes back blank. I don't have one book on Reformed theology or by Reformed pastors and leaders. And so we're constantly trying to get more sponsors in order to get more people in the project. We try to get seminary students as well. If you can get them early, before they get grounded in bad doctrine, you know, that's our goal a lot of times, is try to reach these seminary students and Bible students early on and get them into the project, because the project lasts for 3 years. And 3 years, and so that's, like I say, a book a month and conference participation and theological training as well. Absolutely. Yeah, you get a photo of the pastor, you get a brief biography about his life and ministry, and we also ask them when they are accepted or when they're adopted, we ask them to write every 2 to 3 months a letter of what's going on in their lives and ministry, how the books are blessing them, and we have those translated and sent to the sponsor. So the sponsor can follow along with what's going on in the pastor's life and see how, you know, the money is being spent.
You may have said this already, but what does it actually cost to adopt one pastor?
Yeah, I think it's said on the video, but I didn't say. I think I forgot to mention. It's $35 a month, and it's been $35 a month for about 5 years. $35 a month to help a pastor. Like I said, we ask for a 1 year commitment, and after 1 year, if you decide, you know, I don't want to continue or I can't continue, that's no problem. But we ask for a 1 year commitment, when our goal is to have the pastor in for 3 years. Also, is $50 a month is a pastor. You can pay for the pastor to help him to get the books and go attend the conference, and also the extra amount goes to help his wife attend the conference with him. So at $50 a month, the pastor could go to the conference with him and participate, and we've seen some marriages restored. The conference is like 5 days, the one in Brazil. And so it's a vital time of fellowship and family time. A lot of times these pastors really, really need. So, yes, sir.
When you and your wife were first getting ready to leave for Albania, but what did that look like with your parents? How did they respond? How did you?
Well, I was still single when I went to Albania. It was 6 months before we got married. And of course, my parents were not really followers of the Lord. So they, like, you know, if you think this is God's best for you, and, you know, we're behind you, we support you. That was their way. And of course, my wife's family are very dedicated Christian family. And so they didn't want to see their daughter go far away, but at the same time, they have a big heart for missions. And so they supported us, and been behind us all along the way. It's not easy to leave home and family. Of course, today you can talk pretty much every day to mom and dad, you know, if you're on the other side of the world. But in those days, you know, it was letters every 2-3 weeks, you know, in those early days. And even before that, we don't realize, we know that sometimes missionaries went out never expecting to see family again. And many of them never did, so. Yes, sir.
Are there theological issues with the Bible translations in some of these places? Do you have to sort any of that out first? Or do you just start with the books and then hope that that kind of makes its way back? Like between different Bible translations that might be, these pastors might be using, I'm not sure, you know, being, what languages they're translated from.
Right.
If Portuguese. Kind of starting off with a base, it's kind of hard to overcome with just these extra books.
No, I'm not really sure I understand exactly. I'm from Hogjaw Valley, so you have to you have to remember that.
Do they have a good Portuguese Bible translation to start with?
Yes, there's a lot of translations in Portuguese actually, and there's, you know, they have from the ones that are considered along the lines of King James, and then Gideon's Bibles, and then they have other translations like NIV. They have in Brazil. They have the Living Bible. There's probably 10 or more different translations of the Bible. Usually, this I haven't seen any problem though with that. Yes, going once, twice. Lady in the front, yes.
Did you feel like spiritually ready to go overseas?
I was probably, when I finished seminary, I was ready to win the world. I mean, I was like tired of classes. I was hungry for missions. I mean, when God called me into missions, I ate and slept in missions. I read biographies about missionaries, and I was ready. In fact, I quit seminary at one time, and with the thought of going to South America, I said, I don't need this seminary studies. And I got a letter from my dad, and my dad almost never wrote me letters, and he never wrote me about spiritual things as well. And he wrote me a long 2-page letter, and in the letter he says, me and God want you to stay in seminary. Because if you leave seminary with the plans to come back, you probably never will. And so finish what you started. And then, so I did. So I finished it, but I was ready to go. I was a little bit naive about things on the other side of the world. But okay. Thank you for your attention. Thank you for your prayers, your support. And anything else if you want to talk to us, we'll be maybe around in the back there by our display.
Thank you for listening. Grace Heritage Church meets in Auburn, Alabama. Services are held at 9:30 a.m. on Sunday morning at 1345 Analu Drive,